So here's translation. Alas, Uddhava says, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breasts. Okay. And if you had the visual part of the presentation here, that we had a, like I said, when we went on the internet, we found so many pictures of Putana, and also the word, the Italian word for prostitute. Prostitute also brought up a few pictures that unfit for sannyasi or brahmachari or basically anybody's consumption. Had to glance over those. We had to take, I don't know, how would you call it? Usually we talk about taking nectar out of a stalk of poison, but going through that, we had to take out, poison out of a stalk of garbage or something. So we expected the poison in the form of Putana. And here's, a little cartoon picture somebody had there. Putana went about her evil task. I'll smear my breasts with poison and feed the babies. Ha, ha, ha. So she has a little apothecary shop there and everything. And looks kind of ugly. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay.
So
yeah.
I do that for him.
Okay. We'll give you some background noise here, somebody. Yeah. Here is an example of the extreme, Prabhupada says, here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord. Extreme mercy, okay? And, of course, this is cited different times by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so we could take it, this verse, maybe the one, most prominent verse in all of the ones of Buddha's presentations, maybe. And it said, here is an example of extreme mercy of the Lord, even to his enemy. It is said that a noble man accepts the good qualities of a person of doubtful character, just as one accepts nectar from a stalk of poison. So, of course, when Mother Sati is criticizing Shiva, criticizing Daksha, and she says an ordinary person, he sees people's good and bad qualities, then an extraordinary person, he just sees a person's good qualities and doesn't see they're a bad person. But extremely extraordinary person, he sees people's bad qualities as good qualities. And that's what Lord Shiva is. But you've actually seen Lord Shiva's good qualities as bad qualities. So you're like fifth class compared to him. But here Prabhupada's saying this is a noble person. Even though somebody has some bad qualities, he looks and sees their good qualities like that. And so, of course, he then lives in the world of good qualities. So we looked on the internet here for some nice pictures of roses. With thorns. Yeah, the roses have thorns. Everybody knows that. There's still people, a little bit of care. They pull the rose over and smell it. They look at it. They take it. They use it for decoration like that and so on. So that's a different way to live life. We can live life seeing bad qualities and bathing our mind in the urine of negative things, or we can see the good qualities. Of course, we should see both, as devotees. For Sankirtan, this is how people are. So we should see both qualities like that. It seems to be the process. Okay. Then slide number 6, Prabhupada continues. In his babyhood, he was administered deadly poison by Putana, a she-demon. But my slide is also going mad here. Okay. In his babyhood, he was administered poison by Putana, a she-demon who tried to kill the wonderful baby. Yeah? And because she was a demon, it was impossible for her to know the Supreme Lord, even though playing the part of a baby was no less than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's kind of, I think, a point that Prabhupada makes, kind of a side point from this verse, that we always remember that even though Krishna was playing the part of a baby, he was still nonetheless the Supreme Personality with all potencies like that, which was always kind of difficult for the Vrijbasis and Mother Yashoda to reconcile. And there's a nice picture of Putin there with some of the gopis looking on, and gopis and gopas looking on, and what you call it, in horror, aghast, like this. Yeah. So I think it's in the Garga Samhita, when we're on the Brajmana Parikrama, that's being quoted a lot, the Garga Samhita, because it has so many pastimes. And some people say it's not a Gaudiya Vaishnava text, but Shivaram Swami was defending it because it says in there that some incarnation knew he would take birth in Gaura Lila, you know. So anyway, the comment there is that Putana in her previous life was Bali Maharaj's sister. Okay. And so when Bhamadev came into the arena, and she was just overwhelmed with, you know, maternal affection. Oh, what a beautiful, cute little kid. Oh, my goodness, you know. And I wish I had a baby like that, and he could, you know, sit on my lap and take milk from me and so on like that, you know. So, I'm having to readjust here because my robot is all by itself deciding to, what's going to happen here? Okay, that's great. My robot's gone mad. Decided to go mad here. Okay. So she was feeling like that. You know, she wanted to have a maternal relationship with Krishna. You know? But then, when he stole all the property from the family, then she said, oh, I wish I could just poison that brat. You know, like that. So then she got both opportunities. So very, very feminine relationship, I guess. You know, a man wouldn't want to poison Bhamadev if you want to, you know, kick him or something like that, stomp on him. Yeah, but from the very beginning, so she had this feminine rasa, and she was able to take birth where she was able to satisfy all her desires. She was able to have Krishna as her baby and maybe feel some kind of maternal thing to him, but at the same time to mix with this poisonous attitude. So maybe it wasn't completely that Krishna was giving her the position of a mother because she wasn't without those feelings altogether, you know, but they were very contaminated, you know, and so then... like sometimes I want to eat something, some cheese or something, you know, something like that for energy. But also there's some lust mixed in with it. So I think, oh no, don't eat that. It's, you know, not good for you, this and that. But then I start to analyze, well, why am I attracted? Why am I attracted? And there is a real desire for nutrition. Okay. But it's mixed up with how this is going to stimulate my senses, and I'll be able to experience a kind of rasa as a supreme controller, you know. Okay, so in a previous lifetime, there's a good opportunity that she was Balimara's sister. Slide number 7. Prabhupada continues. His value as the Supreme Lord did not diminish upon his becoming a baby to please his devotee, Yashoda. Hmm. The Lord may assume the form of a baby or a shape other than that of a human being, but it doesn't make the slightest difference. He is always the same supreme. A living creature, however, powerful he may a living creature, however powerful he may become, by dint of severe penance, can never become equal to the Supreme Lord. No. Okay. And it is important because it's described, of course, in the Krishna book. We can all remember that when Putana saw baby Krishna, she had enough, you know, of her own potency, to appreciate that this child can destroy the entire universe. You know, and that's kind of strange, that point that she went ahead and then approached him. She should, at that point, it seems like she should have just run away, you know. So again, maybe because she was attracted to him in a certain way, to this relationship, you know, having her breast sucked by him, you know. And at the same time, too, Krishna, and he describes also, Krishna was bewildering her and didn't look at her. You know, after that, turned his face away for possibly different reasons, but one so that she wouldn't be able to appreciate his potency and be frightened. Slide number 8. Lord Krishna accepted the motherhood of Putana because she... Lord Krishna accepted the motherhood of Putana because she pretended to be an affectionate mother, allowing him to suck her breasts. Okay? Yeah. The Lord accepts the least qualification of a living entity and awards him the highest reward. So maybe this is the most, prominent, thing that stands out in this verse is this one sentence here. The Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. So the fact that we have some opulence in devotional service, maybe we can just get our rounds every day. We can follow the four principles. Okay, we can do this, we can do that. Then we shouldn't, I think, actually we should understand that whatever little success we have is actually extreme mercy of the Lord. And we're not going to qualify much in any way whatsoever. It's only because Krishna is accepting whatever little qualities we have and giving us the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. And therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? Okay. Slide number 9. Yeah. And then we had it's kind of the end of the purport. And so yesterday, was it Gary Govardhan? He made a nice summary how, the verse Uddhava is referring to his previous verses and his whole, really, of course, you have to read the prayers all at one time and get into the humor of the thing, the perspective, and whatever verses you're saying are, of course, modulated by what's been said before. This is more like a smarnam, Jnana is more or less this process of one intellectual thing at a time, grammatical structure, linear thinking. But in smarnam, we come to the point where we come to the point of bhava or of a consciousness where we're, broader consciousness. Not just karma, not just jnana, but not dhyana. And this idea, we go ahead and recite these verses again and again. And each verse, because we have that capability, if we let it, if our heart is soft enough, it can be modulated by these things. If we have a Krishna conscious heart, and there's Krishna content, we'll ring and start to build a certain kind of icon, in our heart, like that yantra, And so then it's a matter of just putting things in different ways like that. I remember, when I got the Krishna book before I ever met devotees, I was reading it, and after some time I began to appreciate, wow, this is incredible, And Prabhupada did it it's 13.7 type. It's a very big type. And so what happens is you start to see every single word independently. And I remember, I would just go over each sentence again and again and again until finally I got it just right, the verb and pronouns, the object, And it's a very, very iconographic book like that. It's kind of deceptive because when you print it in smaller type, later editions, you lose that nature. I think in terms of typesetting, anything bigger than 11 points, you start to see each word independently, most people. And so, it is a fact that when it's printed smaller, you lose that iconographic nature. Another thing is, too, is where the paragraph breaks, because I don't think in the later ones that Prabhupada himself put in the paragraph breaks, so sometimes those seem to be in the wrong places. And then sometimes, too, when you're speaking, you may slow down and say one sentence very emphatically. But in our books, we don't put things in. Usually, we don't put them in italics like that. Although sometimes Prabhupada has sections in italics for emphasis. So it is. Maybe we have to use our inspiration to realize and slow down and read one sentence. And it's really it's a meditational experience. Prabhupada's books, meditating on the purports, contemplating them. And, if we go that slow, how are we going to read them all? It's a fact. So Prabhupada says that nobody can take everything the spiritual master is offering. Another time he says, even in 100 years, you cannot read all these books. Read all these books thoroughly, I think he says. So maybe, sometimes in Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhai Baba, we do an overview of Prabhupada's books, kind of going through and seeing them. And then later, use that as a guide for our preaching, our sankirtan, our purification, and to pick out, these prayers is very, very nice, just to recite these prayers by Uddhava. I've done it a couple times in class settings, and it's a beautiful little Krishna book, like that, his Sushmarnam. So then I was kind of thinking about what's the actual content here, and it was talking about mercy. Mercy. Who can be more merciful? Krishna may be very, very strong, very powerful. He may be very heroic, giving, what's the word, all the different aspects of heroism, not attacking a downed enemy, not showing cowardice even in the face of challenging situations. You know, he may be very funny. He may be very ghastly at times. You know, he may be very protective, like everybody's daddy. You know, so on. So all these different aspects of his character are there. But here he's talking about Dayalu, you know, mercy. Yeah, it's a very powerful word, we know, like that. Doyal Nitai. Yeah, Lord Nityananda is very merciful. Guru is some ways, that's the idea, the guru is the manifestation of mercy. You know? And in the big struggle, according to Satya and Daya, they mentioned this before, that Harish Chandra, it's on, maybe on the internet even, there's a movie there from one of the Upanishads or Puranas, where Harish Chandra is a very powerful king, and in his court he has one case where something like, you know, according to truth, what is the situation, what do the law books say, then the person should be executed, and his head chopped off, something like that. But in his heart, considering everything, he's saying, well, you know, if I was merciful, I would let him go this time. Okay. So in his mind, then he has, at night, in the movie, he's walking back and forth, you know, Satya, Daya, truth, mercy. Which should he follow as the king? What is the essence of justice? You know? So then Narada Muni and Vishwamrita, I think they have this whole thing of creating this whole illusion and taking through all these things. And finally, he goes through all his experiences, he comes to the conclusion that no, I'm not going to be apply Satya, I'm going to be apply Daya, you know, like that. And then the illusion goes away, and he's back there, and he realizes, yes, that mercy is the essence of justice, not truth. We had some encounters with the Catholic Church, and they say the same thing, that mercy is the essence of justice, not truth. You know? Of course, truth is there. You know? And so the same way, see, that Durga is very truthful. We wouldn't expect her in any way of giving us punishment or reactions we don't deserve. You know, she's concocting things. The nurse just has to do what the mother says with the child. So when we're put under the care of Durga, she just applies the law. You know, and when she can give a report to Radharani and Krishna, the jiva is acting properly. You know, but then Radharani, on the other hand, we see that mercy predominates. You know, so this is the point, that ultimately Krishna's mercy, yeah, on reclaiming the conditioned souls, is his most prominent quality. And even though we don't deserve to get out of these situations, oh my goodness, we don't deserve it. We don't want it, you know. So, but still, Krishna is so merciful, he finds tricky ways to help us, you know. So one song here, slide number 9, you got that there? This is, of course, everybody knows this. This song is called Amazing Grace. And one historian of the song, it was written by John Newton in Olney Hymns in 1779. And he'd been through all kinds of weird stuff himself. He was a slaver and, you know, taking human beings off of the slave market and everything else. But finally, then he gave it up, became a pastor, and he had different experiences. So he wrote this song, Amazing Grace. And it's one of the most popular, you know, songs in the world. So it's amazing that people do appreciate this. The estimate is that every year it's sung, I guess in public performances, prominent performances, 10 million times a year, like that. So this is kirtan, right? This is sang, this is kirtan. So in this world there is Christian kirtan going on. I'll just read it here. I guess we'd all sing it together here. Amazing grace, two different melodies. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Right? It's all kinds of, you look on the internet, it's unlimited. You know, it's like these tenors, somebody, what is it? It's like the national, some bagpipe band, military bagpipe band up in Canada singing with all these lights on there. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. So here's the point of going back to Godhead. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Okay, oh my God, Timirandas, yeah. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear. So beginning, fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. It's implicit in the Bible. Fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. We got enough brains to figure out that if you're crossing the big guy up in the sky, you should probably have a little bit of fear about what's going on, you know. But of course, Ravana and the Rakshasas, they had no fear of anything they were doing like that. And Kapiladeva says, devotional service in the mode of ignorance is carried on out of fear and passion, out of desire, and out of duty, a sense of knowledge, out of in goodness. Okay, 'twas grace that taught my heart to fear. And I guess for grace, we can just put in his divine grace here. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear. Yeah, and we all know the Prabhupada can be pretty scary, you know. And grace, my fear relieved. And then he can smile when we straighten up and acting properly. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Oh, very interesting. When we first, you know, I think for me, my first presence of Prabhupada, because we have Bapu, Bapu Vani, Bapu association with Prabhupada. Okay, very intense. But then Vani, we're talking about it. So my first association, there'll be many of us, and of course often was Prabhupada's words, you know, and specifically it was the Krishna book, like that. And so I remember at a certain point I started developing this kind of very, what's the word, real faith in just in the Krishna book, that this is something very separate. I've been looking all my life for all this stuff, this way, that way, so many authors, so many things, and always that they weren't satisfied. But that's kind of like what it was. And I got the Krishna book, I was finally coming to something which I saw was I could always go to it and find peace. I could always go to it and find novelty. You know, so it became something very, very reliable in my life, you know. Yeah. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed? And it was like that. It was like something in all this storm because you're suffering so much. At that time, of course, I was at UC Davis. It was in this hippie culture, intellectual environment. And so it's so much, you know, suffering, you know, yeah, mental suffering. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace hath brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. It's very easy to see Prabhupada know this. The Lord has promised good to me. His word my hope secures. His word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. So you see kind of reflection of the Lord's prayer in here, our Father who art in heaven. He will my shield and portion, give us this day our daily bread, be as long as life endures. Yes, when this flesh and heart shall fail and mortal life shall cease, I shall possess within the veil a life of joy and peace. Kind of like Sat and Ananda. Sat and Ananda. The veil. I guess it means just that which we cannot see now. Adhokshaja Dham, you know. The earth shall soon dissolve like snow. The sun forbear to shine. But God who called me here below will be forever mine. This is Christian theology. This is Sankirtan, Kirtan. And of course, if you know, it's being sung 10 million times, then how many people are singing it? You know, we've got several million, I mean, hundreds of millions of people singing this thing. And of course, when you do sing it in the chorus and everything else, you know, and Krishna's there. This is the age of Kali. You know, maybe you do meditation, not much effect. You do Varnashram Dharma, not much effect. You do, you know, what's the other one we got there? Jnana. And try and cultivate wisdom, not much effect. But when you do kirtan with a bunch of people together, and why do you do it 10 million times a year? Because there's some reciprocation, and people feel the intensity of that thing, you know. So this is interesting, the mercy of the Lord. But what is the mercy here, you know? The mercy they're talking about is kind of a general thing, you know, and maybe reminding us, and of course when we put a person on the face in terms of his divine grace, it becomes much more realizable, you know, how Krishna, Prabhupada has helped us so many times, you know. And the thing is, if we have a regular sadhana, I'm preaching to one big psychologist now, and we're talking about meditation. He said he always kind of thinking that people who do meditation and have regular religious rituals, it's because they're afraid and this and that and so forth and so on. Or it's just a habit, you know, the stuff. And I would say many times, yeah, it is. It's just a habit. We do it out of fear or something. But it works. And there are things to be afraid of. There are many toils and snares, you know, set for us, you know. I remember one time, there's one devotee, one young lady, who probably everybody knows her name. I won't mention it, though, again, like that. And she's a nice person, too, but she's a very potent young lady, girl, not very big, but very powerful. You know, she caused the fall down of at least one guru and several other people. So anyway, she came to the temple as a bhaktin, and I was a brahmachari in the temple in San Francisco. And she knew devotee, whatever, and so she went up to the, I went up to the campus, to the Berkeley Temple. It's about maybe like an 8-block walk, you know. So I'm walking up the campus with the Harinam party and stayed there maybe for like about 45 minutes, okay. And I started walking back, you know, and she started walking back behind me, okay. And the social pressure, as a new person, especially a new devotee, everything, social pressure just to turn around and say, hello, how are you? You know, this and kind of stuff was just incredible, you know. But I felt this thing, no, I'm a brahmacharya, I shouldn't talk to her. So I kept thinking about Lot, you know, turning around looking at his wife, you know. But it was incredible pressure just, you know, to go on there and just not turn around and talk. So if I'm walking down the street for like, 8 blocks with this good Mataji following behind me like my shadow or something, you know, and not saying anything like that and so on. So I'm in some ways looking at it, there it was. And there was a snare of Maya, just to be polite, to be the supreme friend and say, hello, how are you? Welcome to the temple. You know, it must be a little boring for you, first time, how are you? Okay, blah, 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 blah. So we don't know in some ways how many snares Maya has laid out for us, is laying out for us. I mean, we do know how many, many of them she does and how many times she's caught us. You know? So this is mercy. But here, in this verse, let's go ahead, number 10, I think it's there. Yeah. Well, it's not there. Anyway. Yeah. We'll go to the other point next. Okay, so I have one more. Then I want to have, besides the Christian mercy here, I came to the Muslim mercy, how mercy is seen within the Muslim church. As you see this is slide number 10. On the right side is Sophia, the mosque at Sophia. It's also a nice thing to look on the internet. This one actually is sweet. It's 3,000 pixels by something. And blow it up or put on your wall like that. This is a very old one too, and more modern ones. So the Sufis, the word Sufi, explained to us, comes from the word Sophia, and they were like a brahmachari clan or peoples or mystics who hung out in the temple of Sophia, and they became Sufis. So a very beautiful place for the glory of God and all of his qualities here. And in the Quran, in the Surah Az-Zumar 39:53 says, say, O my servants who have transgressed against their souls, despair not of the mercy of Allah. Indeed, Allah forgives all sins. Truly, He is most forgiving, most merciful. Yeah. So that's a quality, you know. Prophylactic and antiseptic. So prophylactic means he, different quality, Krishna's qualities, purificatory qualities. He keeps us from falling down. This is mercy. And after we've fallen down, the economy picks us up. Of course, we don't want to exploit this. That's the whole thing. If we exploit that, then that, the Prabhupada says many times, that is the worst offense to the holy name. You know, was it number 7? To commit simple activities in the strength of chanting the holy names like that. You know, to use that mercy, exploit the extreme mercy like that. You know, but Krishna is how merciful. I remember one time Bhavananda, when Hansaduta had some problems, Bhavananda Rameshwar and Hidayananda Maharaj kind of took over the Berkeley Temple as a committee, and they were all sitting there. There's a big thing, of course, one of the first guru fall down, so all this kind of different opinions and strong emotions. And they were taking over, and it was interesting because Bhavananda said, Rameshwar said, we've never seen this before. 3 GBC secretaries cooperating in one zone. And if we can't do it, you must judge us as being very neophyte. Or they couldn't do it. within within 1 month, they all got their alpha male egos going, and I think Kridayananda Maharaj ended up, you know, being in charge, you know. Yeah. And then, but Bhavananda, when he was there, Prabhu, he said, somehow that came up, he said, he asked Prabhupada, if a disciple falls down after, you know, being initiated and spiritual master promising to take him back to Godhead, is the spirit, and he comes back, is the spiritual master obliged to accept him back? And Prabhupada looked at him and said, no. And maybe knowing his character, future like that, he said, because it looked strong, he said, no. But then he looked at him and said, but the amount of mercy that a bona fide spiritual master will show upon a sincere disciple is, practically speaking, unlimited. Joy. Okay. But don't take advantage. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there is, we see the same concept, but now look at slide number 12 here. Number 11. So we got some pictures of Mother Yashoda. So here's the contrast, because Putana is the imitation mother. You know, but what's she imitating? You know, why is she so evil? You know, because this is, we all kind of consider this as being the most extreme thing. You know, and of course, if you have a female body, it's of course something from which extreme stimulation to do your dharma and to be in the bodily concept of life. It's mother with her child. You know, mother with the child. Let's see, we tried to look at some nice pictures of Mother Yashoda and Krishna. There's so many. This is one nice one. It shows Yashoda milking a cow on one side, and on the other side is little Krishna trying to stand up properly and hold on to her. And he has a cup in his hand. I didn't notice that. Has a cup in his hand. Yeah. And so this is the whole thing. And the Mother Yashoda is engaging this cow, and the cow, of course, wants to give her milk to Krishna. You know, like that. So this is the idea. It's such a pure thing. I mean, he publishes even the material world. We see, even exalting it over, you know, conjugal love in the material world. Such an extremely, extremely, you know, pure thing, nice thing. In slide number 12, and your Mother Yashoda, feeding baby Krishna, same thing on her lap, you know. So, you know, such a nice thing. That's a nice thing. So Putana is in some ways the biggest witch in the world. I don't know, is there anybody more evil than Putana? There's a kind of question here. We can think of any demon more evil than Putana. One of our devotees in South America, Mother Divya Bani, she has, I think, 5 doctorates. You know, so she has very interesting classes and very interesting relationships with her students. So we give classes sometimes, you know, her students and people. And so we're talking about the hierarchy of the elements and hearing. So then she's talking. She says, "You young ladies." And of course, she has this very kind of motherly like relationship with the girl. She's maybe like about 60 years old, you know. So she says, "All you young ladies." I'm getting an echo now. Somebody get the microphone open there. Yeah. All you young ladies, you said, you must be very careful because these boys are going to try and catch you with your ears like that. And they'll say so many things. Oh, the sun may go cold, but I'll never stop loving you, and so on. And so she says, all you young ladies, all the girls, of course, kind of blushing. You know, all you young ladies, you be careful because these boys are out to catch you with your ears. And be careful what you listen to. Then she looks at the boys and she says, all you guys, you be careful, because these young ladies are out to catch you with your eyes. So you be careful what you're looking at. So very nice, you know. So then she also, another time she mentioned, she said that, women can be 6 times better than men, but when they're evil, they can be 6 times more evil. That too. So it's interesting. It's interesting, Mello here, he's using this, and something for essay question, topic there. Is there anybody more evil than Putana? Okay, let's go ahead to our next slide here. Our discussion of good and evil. Number 14, I guess our last point here. So we're also in the morning in our reading here, this because we try and read like Chaitanya Charitamrita before Mangalartik, Nectar of Devotion, and after Mangalartik, you know, kind of a regular vision of the day. And then you stick with it, but it's nice to keep our mind under control. So now we're reading Teachings of Lord Chaitanya before Mangalartik. And there... is the instructions to Sanatana Goswami and the opulence of Krishna. So in this description of describing the opulence of Krishna, because Sanatana Goswami knows so many things, but so Lord Chaitanya is informing him of new things. So the opulence is of Krishna. So there he quotes two verses from these instructions to Uddhava, 3.2.21 and 3.2.12. And the first one he quotes is 3.2.21. Swayam twasham yatishayas tridisha swarajya lakshmi aptad samasta kama balim harad bis chira lokapalai kirita koti edita padapita. Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of threes and is independently supreme by achievement of all kinds of fortune, to Swaraja Lakshmi. He is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of the creation, who offer him the paraphernalia of worship by touching their millions of helmets to his feet. So he quotes this, and then this just becomes a seed for many, many verses after that, describing how Krishna is the master of the three modes, how Krishna is the master of the three material worlds, how Krishna is the master of the material world, spiritual world, and Goloka, how Krishna is the master of Mathura, Dwarka, and Vrindavan, like that. So he gives many different explanations of this verse. So for our own preaching, this verse, Swayam Tva Shankshyati Shayasha Tradisha, is an important verse for our Sankirtan. And then Lord Chaitanya next, when he's talking to, of course this is preaching to elevated soul. And we find these like psychology people are not ordinary people. They experience subtle things and they believe in these things. And then the Christians and different people like that, Mormons, Yeah, so these verses are very, very nice to form a basis. And the next one, of course, is 3.2.12, he quotes. This is after describing more or less the Vaikuntha qualities of Krishna, the expansions. Then he comes to Krishna himself. And Prabhupada says, and then Lord Chaitanya sang a very nice song before he starts this. I think he quotes this verse, then after that he sings this very nice song, Prabhupada says, which is one verse. So the verse here is 3.2.12. Yamarcha lilaupai yikam svayoga. The Lord appeared in the mortal world by his internal potency, yoga maya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their own opulences, including the Lord himself in his form as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus his, Sri Krishna's transcendental body, is the ornament of all ornaments. So Prabhupada says that this his internal potency, his yoga maya potency, is not displayed in Vaikuntha. But when Krishna came here, he displayed it. Of course, in our most basic text, Upadeshamrita, Vaikunthaj janito vara madhupari, Madhupuri, Mathura, is greater than the kingdom of God. So we can go there, and we can go there, and we can experience it. If we're devotees, we can experience it, by going there. Even now, we can get a taste for our own purification, for our own perspective, like that, to keep us on this, in our Sankirtan mood, like that, and keep us becoming servants of Krishna. So these two verses, and these speeches of Uddhava, 3.2.21, form the basis of discussing Vaikuntha, and 3.2.12 form the basis of discussing Krishna's beautiful opulence. So next slide, number 14. And it's nice to compare the translation. And in the very beginning, probably had this translation in the third canto, and later in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Of course, it's Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of threes and is independently supreme by achievement of all kinds of fortune. He is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of the creation who offer him the paraphernalia of worship by touching the millions of helmets to his feet. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita, 3.21.33. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the master of the three worlds, yeah, and the three principal demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. No one is equal to or greater than him. By his spiritual potency known as Swarajya Lakshmi, and all his desires are fulfilled while offering their dues and presents in worship. The predominating deities of all their planets touch the lotus feet of the Lord with their helmets. Thus they offer offer prayers to the Lord. So it seems like a little bit more clear in some ways. Okay, the next slide, which is number 3212. So in the third canto it says, The Lord appeared in the mortal world by his internal potency, Yoga Maya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their own opulence, including the Lord himself in his form as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus his, Sri Krishna's, transcendental body is the ornament of all ornaments. And then Majalila 21:100. That chapter has like 354 verses in it or something like that. The opulence of Krishna. To exhibit the strength of his own spiritual potency, the Lord manifested a form just suitable for his pastimes in the material world. This form was wonderful even for him and was the supreme abode of good fortune. Its limbs were so beautiful that they increased the beauty of the ornaments worn on the different parts of his body. So to me, the humor in Chaitanya Charitamrita is more like a conversational humor. Maybe because Lord Chaitanya is speaking it, you know. And then we had, right after this verse, this is 100, CC Maji 21:100. In the next slide, number 16, is that what Prabhupada says is Krishna then sang, Lord Chaitanya then sang a very beautiful song. I guess we can sing this during artiks and stuff. This is a Shri Guru, Charana Padma. Krishna Raya Teka Kela Sarvotama Nara Lila Nara Vapu Tahara Swarupa Gopa Besha Venukara Nava Kishar Natavara Nara Lila Haya Anurupa. That's something you just want to go on singing forever. No, it's very intoxicating, so beautiful. Krishna Yateka Kela Sarvotama Nara Lila Naravapu Tahara Svarupa Gopadesha Venukara Navakishor Natavara Nara Lila Ayanurupa. You can just imagine Lord Chaitanya, holding Sanatana Goswami's hands while you're singing this and maybe embracing him. And of course, what is Sanatana Goswami? What is his internal form? How is he responding to all this? Lord Krishna has many pastimes, of which his pastimes as a human being are the best. Wow. His form as a human being is the supreme transcendental form. In this form, he is a cowherd boy. He carries a flute in his hand, and his youth is new. He is also an expert dancer. All this is just suitable for his pastimes as a human being. Like that. Okay. In our slide 17 here, and we have a picture of Krishna sitting on the rock, on a cloth there with a little calf next to him. Very fortunate fellow. And of course, maybe one of the nicest pictures of Krishna. Vrishabhasi and son, like that, so on. As Krishna is a cowherd boy, like that. And that's, of course, that's the hope. The hope that the Lord has, by his amazing grace, is offering us. O Vaishnav, so O Saranagati, Saranagati, Vaishnav soul, lead me on to Vrindavan. And the other people, they want to take birth in Gaura Lila, because here's an opportunity so easy to go to Vaikuntha. I started to go to Goloka. I'm in Vaikuntha. I'm in Ayodhya. I'm so many places. But I want to go to Goloka, at least for the afternoon. So how to get there? Take birth during the Kali Yuga. Yeah. And then you can get a chance to experience this Gaura Lila. Gaura Lila, like that. And of course, Gaura then echoes his lila for generations, maybe a little bit before, but a lot afterwards, a lot of echoes afterwards. You know, so how are we supposed to go on with this echo and transmitting it however we can, you know, hoping we become qualified instruments to echo this mercy, and the extreme mercy, what? To appreciate this mercy in Goloka. And of course, you know, we're saying that extreme mercy is also, I mean, even more than Yashoda. So what is that Uddhava's comprehension? He was talking about the gopis, you know. But in Pushtimar, they accept the gopis, and they accept Mother Yashoda, but for their comprehension, Mother Yashoda's relationship is the highest, you know, so on. Okay, so it's kind of our humble presentation there. So any kind of comments, questions, complaints, donations, advice? So Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare.
Anybody there?
All we hear is some furniture moving.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you for the class. That was very nice, very nice.
Did it stimulate your maternal affection for Krishna?
Yeah. I was thinking about...
Like, do you feel like Krishna sometimes?
No.
I feel like a witch sometimes. Yeah, okay.
My mother-in-law had Alzheimer's, and she refused to eat dinner. So I would say, Martha, if you don't eat, I'm going to come in and sing. And I would go in and sing Amazing Grace to her, and she loved that song. It was about the only thing she could remember from day to day is that I would come in and sing Amazing Grace if she wouldn't eat.
Oh, my goodness.
And
the other one, of course, is Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. That's also, you know, super. That's got, you know, the biggest song in the history of the world, but also has the holy name in it. Yeah.
But what I used to tell her is that that verse about when we've been there 10,000 years, we've only just begun, and we would talk about that, and that was the only time she was really lucid. She could talk about eternity, but nothing else.
Yeah. Everything else is falling. Like, death is a good friend for, plus his old age is a good friend for a devotee, because everything else is falling apart. And so the only thing you can actually take shelter of is the higher faculties. I see that now. When I do things, I have to do it on the basis of intelligence. I can't do it on a mental platform. My mind is falling apart. You know? Okay, then after that, it pushes you on the spiritual platform. Wow.
Yeah.
I know one devotee, he was maybe like about 50. He joined with his wife. She may be like about 50, maybe 2 years younger than him, and a couple kids. And they was in the temple in Berkeley, and he was, you know, there and stuff, and family. Maybe like maybe a year, you know. And his wife's father had been a pastor, and so he said he was there when his wife's mother passed on, and she was singing hymns right to the end. And he said right at the end her voice kind of cracked, and then she was gone. And she was engaged in kirtan, yeah, right to the very very end. You know, so it's the George Washington in American Heritage magazine, whatever it is, nice magazine. It describes how he had his last day, and they were reading the Bible. That was the whole thing. They were reading the Bible until he went out. So it's good enough for George. It's good enough for any American. He went out listening to the Bible. So the same with me, same way. It's a common thing, you know, this Krishna Katha, you know, and this potency.
Well, Martha was very lucky. Her son is a devotee and was actually chanting to her when she left her body.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Send them all back to Godhead. Let the gopis sort them out.
Yeah, it was just the daily routine to sing to get her to eat.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, maybe she was also eating if she needed just to hear the song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Maharaj, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Star Meeting just did an update. And although it's a lot of nice improvements, but I'm fearing that maybe there's some things wrong. That's maybe why nobody's saying anything.
Maybe. Yeah, but there's a massive mute thing below the participant box.
Where it says group mute?
Yeah, group mute.
But that's off, so I don't know.
Okay, yeah. I also, this morning, because every day we're online with our morning program, and Devotee was just saying it was even more bizarre with the Android and the other one there, the Google, whatever this thing. That's those two ones, the iPad and the Android. And they had to do their updates, yeah.
The Android was an improvement, but anyway, maybe there's some glitches, who knows. You know, is this the verse that was spoken to Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and that's when he went into ecstasy, and then Gadadhar Pandit knew after that what a great devotee he was?
Yeah, because from the back of my mind, I knew it was someplace else, and he was saying that it even becomes more prominent. I think it was.
Yes, it was.
Okay, there
it
we go.
Was. It's a very important verse. Is my volume too loud?
No, it's fine.
Okay. This verse was also one of two verses that Vedavyas gave to a couple of woodsmen to sing in the forest in hopes that his son Sukadev, who was somewhere in that forest, might hear them and come back to Bhadarak Ashram to hear the rest of Bhagavatam. This is an extremely important verse. Because it shows the extreme mercy of Krishna.
Yeah.
There's no shelter more merciful than Krishna.
Wow.
And this verse demonstrates that.
So why take shelter of somebody who may be a little bit strict?
Right.
We need it.
So I have a couple of more translations. I was bouncing around in Madhya 2298. There's a more elaborate translation of the same Sanskrit.
Uh-huh.
Goes like this. Oh, how wonderful it is. Putana, the sister of Bakasura, wanted to kill Krishna by smearing deadly poison on her breasts and having Krishna take it. Nonetheless, Lord Krishna accepted her as his mother, and thus she attained the destination befitting Krishna's mother. Of whom should I take shelter but Krishna, who is most merciful?
Wow. This is also Sanatana Shiksha. Yeah.
Right. And then another place I found, how astonishing when Putana, the wicked sister of Bakasura, who tried to kill Krishna by offering him deadly poison on her breast, she reached a position befitting the Lord's nursemaid. Could I ever have as merciful a shelter than Lord Krishna?
Wow.
And then 10.638.
10.638,
okay. Is the Bhagavatam. Because Krishna embraced Putana's body with great pleasure and sucked her breast, although she was a great witch, she attained the position of a mother in the transcendental world and thus achieved the highest perfection. And the point Prabhupada makes in the purport is this. These verses explain how devotional service rendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether directly or indirectly, knowingly or unknowingly, becomes successful. Putana was neither a devotee nor a non-devotee. She was actually a demonic witch instructed by Kamsa to kill Krishna. Nonetheless, in the beginning, she assumed the form of a very beautiful woman and approached Krishna exactly as an affectionate mother, so that Mother Jasoda and Rohini did not doubt her sincerity. The Lord took all this into consideration, and thus she was automatically promoted to a position like that of Mother Jasoda. As explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there are various roles one may play in such a position. Putana was immediately promoted to Vaikuntha Loka.
Oh.
In, Vaikuntha, In Vaikuntha Loka, Putana attained the position of a nurse, as described by Uddhava. Putana was elevated to the position of a nurse and maidservant in Golok, Vrindavan, to assist Mother Jasoda. So I guess Mother Jasoda has her helpers.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita describing this, some people were like nursemaids to Krishna. They also shared their milk with him. Wow.
Right. It's, yeah, kind of village system where, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you said Bali's, is it Bali's daughter?
Sister.
Sister, okay. It was at the Jagya. She was so attracted by Vamana Dev that she wanted a child just like him. And
give her milk. Didn't have to breastfeed him. Yeah.
She specifically wanted to breastfeed him.
Yeah, she was just thinking like that and contemplating, oh, so nice to have that baby at my breast. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what Krishna accepted. And the rest of it was just Leela.
Wow. I think many times, too, in terms of this, like, you know, I'm offering to my deity here is the Lord Srinadev, you know. I offer what I want to eat out of my lust, okay? And actually, it's not all that healthy, maybe, you know? And so he has to suffer this kind of, like, poisonous type stuff being offered to him and so on. So, yeah, there is that kind of, you know, Putin the character, even in our offerings. Are we really offering, you know, good food, healthy food to Krishna, like that and stuff? Or is it because of our lust, which, of course, we get a bad reaction from it, from eating too much ghee or something and so on? Yeah.
Yeah, it was in the purport that that Krishna doesn't see, he only sees, accepts the least qualification.
Yeah.
And awards the highest reward. So even for a small effort, Krishna gives us big rewards.
Making this point is, therefore, if we think, I'm doing pretty good, I'm doing big service. No, you aren't doing anything. This is extreme mercy of the Lord. This is coming off. Actually, what you deserve is something like, you know, a little pinch of dust or something, rather than a gold coin. Yeah.
Yeah. Always better to keep our head down.
Yeah. Yeah.
As soon as we stick our nose up, we're in trouble.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Well, I guess I'll go ahead here back to my. Akadasi brought them, you know, iron my clothes here. It's one of the high points of my day is ironing my clothes. I see some result like that. And thank everybody. And this is a wonderful section with Uddhava and all this contemplation, smarnam. Then, of course, in the end, he won't accept Vidura as his disciple, but this is in Maitreya. And the whole Bhagavatam, you know, will develop, you know, between Maitreya. I think it goes through the fifth canto. Vidura and Maitreya are together until about the fifth canto, I think, being described. And after that, it's just Sukadeva Goswami is no longer describing Vidura and Maitreya, but this interaction with Maharaj Parikshit, other resources. So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Hare Ram.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Ram. 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 Hare Ram.